Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Six Ways from Sunday podcast. My name's Ben Wilson, and I'm going to be your host as I sit down with Robin King and other guests over coffee once a week to explore different topics of faith. Six Ways from Sunday is an online faith community exploring how we think, love, and act in the world. And it's part of a new project called Rising Spirit Ministry. And you can learn more about Rising Spirit Ministry at risingspiritministry.com. And also, we'd love for you to join this community by checking out Six Ways from Sunday on Facebook or going to the website sixwaysfromsunday.ca. In this episode of the podcast, Robin and I sat down and we talked about a piece of scripture that I think almost everyone would recognize, where Jesus says to his disciples, "A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another." It sounds so easy, but it is, of course, much more difficult to do in life. So please join Robin and I as we dive into this topic. Welcome back to the show, Robin, and thank you for joining me again over coffee. So this is our fourth episode that we've recorded of the Six Ways from Sunday podcast. And each week we pick something new to discuss. Usually we're basing it on what you're going to be talking about in church on the upcoming Sunday and writing about in your blog. Have you started thinking about what you're going to write about this week or what you're going to talk about in your sermon on Sunday?
The gospel reading for Sunday is the, what I call it, the big one. Okay. Because it's mostly because it's one that's most significant to me. But it's the passage where Jesus says to the disciples in the Gospel of John, Jesus says, "Love one another as I have loved you. I give you this new commandment that you will love one another as I have loved you." And it's to me, it's the big one because it's what it's all about, right?
Yeah.
Jesus wants us to love each other, not the way we talk about or that, you know, the warm fuzzy thing all the time, but the way Jesus showed us to love with his life, not necessarily his death, although that is part of it, but through his life. He's essentially saying to the disciples, you've been with me long enough, you've seen how I do it, now you go and do it. And it, to me, that's the big one because it's what it's all about and it's what we should be doing. And we're not. So the real question is, why aren't we?
Why do we struggle so much?
Why do we struggle so much? Yes. And you know, there's lots of reasons. Nope. There's lots of excuses. There's a few reasons. There's lots of things that we think is a really good reason as to why we don't just all love each other and everything's good and everything. We come up with lots of reasons, quote unquote, as to why we shouldn't do that. But you know, lots of the time, I think those are just, we're trying to avoid doing something which is a lot harder than we think it should be. I think that's what I mean. But we have this idea that love should be easy, because we read all these stories of Jesus, and somehow, you know, Jesus makes it look easy. And honestly, if you're getting that impression from preachers on a Sunday morning, I apologize on behalf of preachers. But no, Jesus doesn't make it look easy. Jesus is constantly reminding us it's a challenge. And I think people need to be constantly reminded that it is a challenge and we're not always going to succeed. But it's the thing that Jesus, here's the thing, I was thinking about this the other day, that I wonder if this isn't one of the biggest factors in why we find it so hard to love like Jesus, is the way John frames that in that famous "love one another as I have loved you" is, this is my new commandment. I'm commanding you to do it. Go and do it.
It's the golden rule, right?
No, it's an order. Go and do it, damn it. It's an order. It's our language of command, right? Commandment. Right? And first of all, let me say, and I don't know how many times I've read this and heard other people read it, I invariably hear, and I'm sure many people do, "This is my commandment, that you love one another." We don't hear Jesus going, "This is my commandment, that you go and love one another." See, and I think if we heard Jesus say, "This is my commandment," and we remember the last time that language was used, Moses, right? We might hear that a little bit differently, because hopefully we've reached a point where we understand that the Ten Commandments, though that language really only dates from about the 15th century, 16th century, that the Ten Commandments aren't orders. In the Hebrew Bible, they're sayings, right? They're ten sayings. They're not meant to be in order, as in go and behave this way and it'll all be good. Here's how you live. Yes, exactly. Here's how you live together. Here's how you create relationship. Here's some really good ways in which you can ensure that relationships are built in a positive way, not a negative way.
So where did this language of commandment come from, and what did it mean at the time? In you said 15th century.
Well, I think in translation. From things I've read, in translation, the first time the Ten Commandments appear as literally the Ten Commandments is in the, I'm going to say the Geneva Bible, but I'm going to be wrong about that. I can't remember which one. In the 16th century that it was translated that way, and suddenly that's the language we use. But the Hebrew Bible, the important piece of this is that the Hebrew Bible says ten sayings, right? The original, the source says, doesn't say command. It says sayings.
Which is very different.
And to of course, our mind, that's not only very different, that's, you mean, so it's like fortune cookie thing. you don't really have to pay attention to it. But yeah. If you use the language of command, it's a command, and we obey God. We obey God. That's the way it works. It's a command because we obey God. Except our whole concept, idea of original sin, I'm not going to say our because it's not mine. Original sin is that original sin comes from disobeying. God said you can eat from any of the trees, anything in the garden except that one tree. You ate from that tree, you're out. That's it. Original sin is based on that, the fact that we disobeyed.
Right. We broke the rules.
And ever since then, we've used that concept of original sin as a way of reminding people that we're, I think, that we're inherently sinful. And we're not. I believe that we're created in the image of God, which means we're inherently good. Have we done some things that we shouldn't? Absolutely. Are we sinful? Absolutely. But see, that's, in fact, a couple of years ago, I wrote a sort of children's version of the story of Adam and Eve, in which I suggested that far from being a sin because they disobeyed God, that essentially God was looking for a way to get Adam and Eve to claim choice, free will.
Okay.
And the way to do that was to get them to choose to not do what God told them to. And so the idea of Adam and Eve being thrown out of the garden isn't so much that they were thrown out of the garden. They stepped out into the world, having acquired free will and able to make choices.
That is such a different view.
Yeah, it's like 360, right? 180. 180. 360 would be right back at it, wouldn't it? But it's a 180 from that idea of original sin.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, because I'm not saying that that lets us off the hook of anything, in the sense that the very first choice that we hear of being made after Adam and Eve leave the garden is a brother kills a brother. He chooses to take a life. So literally the first act of choice outside of the Garden of Eden is murder.
Yeah.
Right? And so I'm certainly not suggesting that that lets us off the hook of sin, because, you know, we're all good now, so we're all good, right? Because we do. Particularly if you consider a way of understanding sin as acting in a way which moves us away from God,
yeah.
We do it a lot. The point of Jesus, of course, is to bring us closer to God.
So
in my mind, it makes absolutely perfect sense that Jesus would say, love one another as I showed you to love. I'm not suggesting you're going to be perfect at it, and I am suggesting this is going to be really hard for you. It's going to be a real challenge for you. It's not going to be easy, and you're going to fail lots. See, I think if Jesus was having this conversation with the disciples, he wouldn't have just left it at, this is my command to go and do this. He would have said more. And he would have said things like, you're going to fail lots, you're going to find that it's hard, and you're going to want to give up, you're going to doubt. This is all going to, absolutely, it's all going to happen. It is. But love is at the center of everything.
Mm.
Created in the image of God, we're built for love. We aren't built for hate. We learn it. And we learn it in part, I'm not saying this is God's fault or anything, but we learn it in part because we have free will. We have the ability to choose. We have options. And we do not choose wisely, frequently. But we can choose, which is also why we can choose to love.
So would you say that we're meant to make mistakes? That we're supposed to falter, that we're supposed to fall and get back up again? And like, obviously no one is perfect, right?
You know, I want to say,
if sin is straying from perfection or making bad choices, then yeah, sure, we all sin, we're all imperfect.
Well, see, I want to say no, of course not, because it's all supposed to be good. But it isn't, because if it were, we wouldn't know that it was, because we have nothing to balance it against. So yes, absolutely, we're supposed to fail. We're supposed to have challenges in life. We're supposed to encounter things that will cause us to have to choose right mm-hmm. or wrong.
And really, would we want it to be any other way? Like, would
I can't imagine why we would in this life. And so let me be absolutely clear about that. That when I hear Jesus say, love one another as I have loved you, and just as an aside, I am aware that this is the gospel that I have previously said was the one that was written so much later that it couldn't possibly be exactly what Jesus was saying. Absolutely, but I think it is also not just the wisdom of Jesus, it's now in many ways also the wisdom of the community. So to have an understanding that through all of the stories of Jesus and the life of Jesus, one of the things we learn from that is we should love one another as Jesus shows us to love. I'm 100% behind that. I just don't think you can leave it there, because it makes it sound like if you would just do this, everything will be perfect. And it's not. And it's hard, and it's a challenge, and life is constantly presenting us with choices of whether or not we should do this or we should do that, and there's a right and there's a wrong. That being said, that's this journey. I want to say it was Edmund Spencer, but I remember these words always as the ending of a absolutely phenomenal piece of choral music that I learned when I was in choirs and things. It's called Fair is the Heaven. The music's by William Harris, and I think the words are Edmund Spencer. But it ends beautifully, of course, but it ends with the words about us coming to endless perfectness. That's how Spencer, I think, thinks of heaven, is that it's endless perfectness, which is so not this. And I think that's part of the point, is that we come from God, we've returned from God. This part of our journey is the journey of challenges and opportunities. It's the journey of faith and doubt. It's the journey of good and bad. It's a journey of learning, and you need all of those options. Mm-hmm. You need all of those challenges. You need all those things all those different kinds of love, even. You need all of those things to fully embrace this life.
Yeah, I think if we're here to grow, if we're here to learn, if we're here to love, that love is so much more meaningful if you choose it, if you learn to love, if you grow into that love. Mm-hmm. If you're born perfect and stay perfect and never, no one ever gets hurt, no one ever makes a mistake, no one ever falters, yeah. No one ever sins, what is that? What, you know, how much meaning does that love really have if we didn't choose it, if we didn't yeah. have to hurt for it, if we didn't have to grow into it?
Yeah.
It's richer and it's more meaningful.
I was reading something the other day that somebody quoted Jane Austen And I was just trying to think of which, I can't remember if it was Sense and Sensibility, or it was one of them, where one of the characters says something like, they simply can't love in part. They're all in. They love, they can't just love somebody a little bit.
That sounds like Pride and Prejudice to me.
Is it Pride and Prejudice?
It's gotta be.
It's probably one of those. It's gotta be one of those anyway, because it's Jane, and I remember it being Jane Austen. But see, I think that's another thing about this. I just mentioned that there are so many different kinds of love. And yes, there are. And we assume when Jesus is saying, and I think we assume, when Jesus says, love one another as I have shown you to love, we assume that, of course, what is meant there is the way Jesus showed us to love in the stories that we know. What about the stories we don't know? And see, here's where I'd go. I'm going to go all in on this. Because there's nothing in the Bible that says Jesus had a wife or family. But there's nothing that says he didn't. And a man of his age in first century Hebrew society, he would have had a wife and children.
Right.
In all likelihood. I mean, I'm not saying he did, because there's no evidence that says he did, but there's no evidence that said he didn't, so maybe he did. In which case, maybe he means other kinds of love. Maybe he means when you love with your love romantically, all in. Like, love completely.
Mm-hmm.
When you love somebody as a friend, or you love somebody simply because they're another human being, all in, right? And that always, all of that presents us with great opportunities, but great challenges, right? Because we're human beings, we grow and change, and our lives change, who we are, we change over time.
So whether we're talking about, and I forget all the Latin, like pathos, or the, like all the different types of love there are, right? And the Bible does talk about, you know, romantic love.
Right. Eros and philia and agape, right?
Yeah,
the Greek ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Greek, right. Sorry, not Latin. So regardless of which of those types of love we're talking about, how do you love someone else in any of those ways the way you would love yourself if we're already struggling with loving ourselves? And most of us truly struggle with loving ourselves first.
Remembering, of course, that this is the same Jesus who said, presuming that the Gospels share the same Jesus, mm-hmm. said the first commandment is to love God, the second is like unto it. That sounds so King James, because that's how I remember it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Well, you can't love your neighbor unless you love yourself first.
I've talked
about that lots. But the part of that that's the hardest part isn't the loving your neighbor part, it's the loving yourself first.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me ask you this then. How easy is it for you to love yourself loving yourself starts with original sin? I'm inherently sinful because I carry this burden of original sin. Because why? Disobeyed.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So are you saying then that we're, so because a lot of us in...
For 2,000 years, the church has been telling us we're flawed because of original sin.
Yeah. Now, a lot of us today, especially like millennials, who don't go to church or prescribe to a certain faith, might not be thinking that way, but it's still kind of part of our psyche in terms of society has given us that baggage over generations of being told that. Is that
presuming,
what you're saying?
Presuming that there is ever a time that we don't think that. That somebody doesn't think that, you know, original sin, it will still take generations to get past how we've carried that into other things. Mm-hmm. I think, and don't get me wrong, I'm not just hammering the Christian view of that. I think most, if not all, religions as part of their system have a concept of original sin somewhere at the beginning. There's something at the beginning where humanity disobeys God or the gods,
mm-hmm.
or however you want to interpret that. But there's somewhere there, there's a thing where we don't do what we've been told, and that's bad. And so we're going to suffer for that for the, you know, eternity kind of story. And I just think, wouldn't it be so much easier for us to love ourselves if we didn't feel like we were already carrying the burden of sin that we didn't actually have any choice about.
Right.
Right? Even that, as I'm saying that, I'm thinking to myself, okay, but that shouldn't excuse us, even if we can get past that concept of original sin, it doesn't excuse us of all of the sins since. And that's one of the things about understanding Jesus' death as redeeming us from sin, is even if you understand it as only redeeming us from the original sin, it doesn't, Jesus' death doesn't redeem us in a way that allows us to go, oh, well, I can just do whatever I want then because I'm good with Jesus.
Yeah.
Right? I can sin away because I'm already... And yet, the fact of the matter is that if we believe that God's love is for everyone, God's love is for everyone. God's grace is for everyone. God's forgiveness is for everyone. See, however we live in this world, and this is why they love one another as I showed you, thing is such an important thing to me, is that however we live in this world, whoever we are, however we live, I believe we come from God and we return to God. That means that however things go in this world, we're still going to return to God. That's a certainty as far as I'm concerned. That's the meaning of our hope, right? Is that it's not just maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't. It's we're certain that it will. That being said, that doesn't mean that you should just live this life however the hell you damn well please, right? It means...
That's such an easy criticism of
it is.
Christianity or other faiths.
It is.
That people say, oh, well, if you have this clause that lets you off the hook and that you're going to be forgiven no matter what, then why not just...
But wait, we have another clause. We have Santa Claus too, but that's... We have another clause. We have this thing where Jesus says, love one another as I showed you to love. He doesn't say, love one another as I showed you to love because that'll get you into heaven. He doesn't say, love one another as I showed you to love because this has meaning to God in another world or another dimension or another. It's because it has meaning here and now, right now. The point of loving one another the way Jesus showed us to love isn't anything to do with getting us into heaven or the afterlife. It's got to do with how we live with each other now. And that's why when we hear the language through the Gospels of Jesus saying things like the kingdom of heaven is at hand or the kingdom of heaven is here, it's not just because I, Jesus, am here. It's because if you love one another as I have shown you to love, that brings you closer to God. That's what builds the kingdom of heaven.
That's what creates it. Yeah.
Every so often I feel a need to say that we so frequently say day in and day out that Jesus wants us to love, that we should love one another, that God wants us to live a life like this. This is what life is for, that it's about relationships and these positive things and everything, and you should go and do that. And it so frequently sounds like we have this expectation that you're going to succeed.
Right.
That people start to go, oh, well, that's a nice thought, but, you know. In fact, I don't think Jesus had any expectation of success or any expectation of what was going to happen with that. I think what he had was a belief in the power of loving the way he showed us to love and wanted us to engage that. So instead of being a command, instead of understanding it as a command or an order to behave a certain way, we need to understand it the same way, I think, that we mean the Ten Commandments. They're not orders for behavior. They're things that, if we take them to heart and live them, will change things.
Yeah.
And that's what I think the same way that we need to understand it, whether it was Jesus' language or not, we need to understand it that way, is that we make change happen not by changing our behavior, but by having that become part of who we are, because it already is. We simply need to access it and live it out, right? The idea that God is in all of us, that Jesus is in all of us, that that power of love, the thing that connects us, is already present. I'm starting to revisit yesterday's sermon, I think, a little bit. But the idea that that's the thing that connects us all, it's there. We need to nurture it and grow it and connect it. And that's what builds positive relationships. Is it going to be successful 100% of the time? No, of course not. Does that mean we should not try then? Of course not. Mm-hmm. We should always try. We should always want to, and it's not just about try. We should always want to live into it. Because it's that idea of loving the way Jesus showed us to love, whether that's loving someone who's been marginalized by society or loving somebody who's hurt and needs healing and is broken, or whether it's loving your enemy or any of those variety of ways that Jesus showed us that we need to love, even love to the idea of greater love, you could not possibly have greater love than to lay down your life for a friend, right? Even to that extent, that's the power of love that Jesus wants us to be in our life, not just behavior, be who we are, like from our heart, right? And to live that way isn't just behavior, it's to live. And that's the point. It's life-giving. Right, it's the vine and the branches thing. It's the we are connected by the fabric of creation thing. Mm-hmm. It's all of those things. They're about building relationships that are nurturing and cause growth. That's what love does. So when Jesus says, "Love one another the way I have shown you to love," this is not an order. This is life. If you live it, it's literally life-giving.
So, does that give you some ideas for this Sunday for your sermon? Or are you just going to see what happens?
It does. It does. I think that I so frequently talk about that verse, "Love one another as I've shown you to love," and to remind people that it's not just words; it's about living out what Jesus showed us to love. And from my perspective, that is so incredibly simple. There's no complicated theology there. There's no complex, you need like a 500-page book to explain this. It's very simple. Just go and love. Mm-hmm. And that is literally the hardest thing in the Bible to do.
And without expectation.
And without strings without attached. Love without expectation. It's the hardest thing to do. And is everyone going to be universally successful at that? And will we change the world if everyone did it? Well, actually, we would change the world if everybody did it. Are we going to be universally perfect at it? No, of course not. But we need to do it. We need to try. We need to always be trying to change the world with love. Because that's what makes it a better place.
Yeah.
And right now there's lots of places that need a lot of love.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I think we can do it though. I think, like you said, it comes down to one person at a time, one day at a time.
Yeah.
One choice at a time. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's both the simplest thing and the hardest thing and the most complex thing. There are lots of reasons that we started out with. There's lots of reasons or excuses, whatever you want to call them. I don't care. There's lots of complications. Let's say that, because that'll cover everything. There's lots of complications in that, which is too bad, because it really is simple. It's hard, but it's simple.
Yeah, well said. Thank you again, Robin. We'll maybe wrap it up there for today.
Yeah.
And if anyone wants to weigh in, join the conversation, share some thoughts about this topic, or make suggestions for other things that we could talk about on the show, you can find us at Six Ways from Sunday on Facebook, or sixwaysfromsunday.ca as the website. risingspiritministry.com is where you can also stream sermon videos from past Sundays or listen to the podcast. So thanks everybody for joining us, and look forward to chatting with you next time.